In this Friday edition, we have a discussion with Jennifer Glick, superintendent of the Klamath Trinity Unified School District. She shares with us some insights from their mock opening tests that they did at the various school sites last week. She talks about the plans for what happened this week and what they're setting up to do beginning next week when they move into phase two of in-person instructions at the Klamath Trinity School District. I have Jennifer Glick, who is the superintendent of the Klamath Trinity Joint Unified School District, on the phone line, and we're going to be talking about some hybrid learning updates and what are we moving towards. So, Jennifer.
Hi, thanks for having me on. So today is the first day that we've announced for phase two of our hybrid learning plan. And we're having it that teachers are allowed to have small groups of students on campus this week, small groups being 4 or 5 students at a time. So this is kind of our transition week. There still might be some one-on-one appointments, some small pods of 4 or 5 for each of the grade levels. And then next week we expect we'll be fully into phase two, which is groups of 4 or 5.
Well, that's different. Yes.
It's kind of exciting. It's a small step, but it's, you know, we're really trying to have this small progression towards the reopening so that we can check each step of the way and see what other preparations do we need to have for school readiness.
So you mentioned in your memo here that there is a health and safety advisory team. Who makes up this advisory team?
So it's myself, school resource officer, the manager of the MTO department, and the school nurse. So
okay.
Willie Hostler, Missy Ammon, Angie Brown, Jennifer Glick.
Okay.
Can I tell you what we did last week and what we're doing this continuing week in terms
Absolutely.
Of that health and
safety? That was going to be my next question.
So last week was really exciting. We had 3 school sites that did their simulations for student arrival. So Missy Ammon had arranged for a bus pickup, which involved all adults. You know, we're having people just kind of test the system. We had some folks arrive to school as students on the bus. We had some folks arrive to school as students, you know, getting dropped off by a parent just to go through a simulation of arriving to school. I mean, there was you could really feel the excitement in the air because it was the first step towards, even though we weren't with students, we had our staff pretending to be students, and it felt like that beginning of the year energy when we get really excited about having kids back on campus. So we just kind of did a mock drill of what it would be like to do the check-ins and the health screening and all of the, temperature taking and all of that.
So what is the changes in the bus routes or the number of students per bus?
Well, that is something we really, I have to say, struggled with and went, you know, this is, I went going back months when we were planning and trying to anticipate what it would look like because the bus capacity is so much lower. So I'm going to go with my best guess after my conversations with Missy. Missy's the expert in the bus capacity, but, you know, something that would normally carry 75 students, we're down to about 25 students in order to have the spacing between kids. So what we're going to do is, and it's a slow process, so we have less capacity because we're keeping the space between students, and then just simply loading the bus takes much longer, so we're going to ask folks to be really patient as we do these, you know, as we get kind of get it down with students, because we're screening every child before they come onto the bus. We're doing a temperature screening. We are asking them to let us know, you know, if they've had any exposure to somebody with COVID, or if they have any of the symptoms. So it's basically 2 questions: have you been exposed to somebody that's tested positive or is symptomatic? And have you had any of the following symptoms? We have a hands-free thermometer that the kids can just walk up to and have their temperature taken as they board the bus. Then they'll be given a little bit of hand sanitizer. We're going to load the bus, you know, kind of back to front, so we have less students walking in each other's airspace. And we think, you know, it's just slow, but it's not that slow. It just takes a little bit longer, and we're going to have to make sure that kids are, you know, not gathering. And we're going to have, it's going to take some practice. We understand that.
And so I was also wondering about, they'll be still wearing their face coverings.
Yes. So one of the things that I think generally across California we're excited about is the level of availability of vaccinations for our elders and for our first responders and, of course, for our school personnel. But we want to remind everybody that all of the safety protocols that we've been practicing are still in place. So we are still requiring face coverings. We are still emphasizing the distancing of 6 feet. We have, you know, plexiglass between secretaries and, you know, folks coming in. So we still have all of those measures in place. They're not going away. So that's one thing that I'm glad I get to just mention. Vaccinated or not, we're expecting everybody to go through the same screening process, whether they're employees or, you know, a family member.
And how do you anticipate that the level of students in-person instructions, say, next week after this trial?
Well, right now in this phase two, which is this kind of, it's kind of the warm up for the full rollout of school, we think that we will have quite a few students. We know that families and kids are really ready to come back to school, especially with this very modified schedule of, you know, 4 or 5 students in a classroom at a time. During this phase two, we are not rolling buses right now. So once the board approves our next phase, that's when we'll start rolling buses. And we expect anywhere from a third to half of our students to be back on campus for in-person learning. Right now, we have about a third of our families or students that have committed and said, yes, we want to be in person. And we think once we start, as time goes on, that more and more people will want to have kids on campus for in-person learning. They may be waiting to see how it goes. They may be waiting for their own, you know, specific family needs in terms of, you know, vaccinations in their families. So we want to also remind families they do have the option of continuing with distance learning, and now we have the option of this, you know, very limited in-person piece of hybrid learning, which is the groups of 4. And then once we move on to where we are rolling buses, we'll have these cohorts where kids can come on for at least, we're expecting 2 days a week, depending on, you know, how small the groups are. Then we may be able to afford some more time. Once we move into rolling buses, we're going to have school on Monday and Tuesday. Wednesday will be an exclusively distance learning day. Give us a chance to kind of catch up with making sure that we do the deep cleans on the campuses, and then Thursday and Friday would be our other cohort. So even when we fully open, so to speak, with hybrid learning, it's still going to be very limited hours and days. But again, like I said, we're trying to make small steps and progressing toward our full reopening.
Well, as you add more students in on those days of in-person instructions, are you going to be rolling more buses too to save time?
We're going to have a staggered opening. So in Hoopa, what we'll do is our first phase, what's called phase 3, which is kind of the first bus rolling. We're going to just start with kindergarten through third grade. And then we'll have 11th and 12th grade at the high school. So we figured we would start, rather than starting with the full school, we'll start with half the school. The state clearly had identified that they were incentivizing opening for K-3 students, for our youngest students. And we thought once we kind of looked at what our needs are across the district, we really wanted to make the first availability for our 11th and 12th graders as well, because they're, you know, closer to graduation. So we'll have a K-3 and 11th and 12th grades. And we are rolling as many buses as we have, and that is, again, you know, because the capacity is so diminished. Once we move into adding in our 4th to 8th graders at Hoopa Elementary, we're going to do a staggered opening. So our little guys will come at 8:30, and our older students, our fourth to eighth graders, will come at 9:05. So just that alone will, you know, kind of double the bus capability. So we're rolling all buses, but we're going to have to just roll them several times a day. And then high school's actually starting quite a bit later so that we don't have to cram kids onto buses because obviously we can't do that. We don't want to have any, you know, violations of the spacing.
I was just wondering if the grant that the state is offering, if more buses could be purchased with those funds to assist in those rural areas?
That's a great question. So we have a number of really good ideas just like that we have to check with and just kind of get pre-approved, because sometimes we have really good ideas and we find out, oh, that's not an allowable expense. I did actually inquire with our auditor before we had this newest allocation that we're expecting that from this AB 86. And I did ask about a vehicle, and that was expressly denied. And I thought it really made sense so we could have a vehicle so that our outreach folks can go out to kids' homes. And so there's, you know, with any state or federal money, there's definitely regulations that we need to ahead of time make sure that we get approved so that on the later time we're not having problems with it. So additional buses, I think, are something that would be important. And then also, you know, our bus drivers are a special breed. They have to have a ton of training, and they have to maintain their training. So bus drivers are very valuable folks to school districts. So that is another piece of it. But there are some provisions for the with that AB 86 for, you know, hiring additional staff. But like I said, it's a highly qualified position. So I think we have all of our bus drivers, they'll be driving a lot. And like I said, multiple trips a day to stagger the arrival time and dismissal times at school.
Is that bus driver training option still open?
I would say that if we do have a bus driver trainer. And if somebody is interested, then they should reach out to the MTO director, Missy Ammon.
Well, I was asking that because we have a public service announcement that had talked about if you wanted to take a workshop that was available.
Yeah, and the good news is, I mean, Klamath Trinity is unique in this way in that we have a trainer on staff. So that a lot of the schools on the coast, like the smaller districts, they have to, you know, find another district that has a trainer. So we have our trainer. So I would say that is continuously available.
Okay, so we'll keep running that. Yeah.
Yes, thank you.
Is there other things that you would like to share with us about this update?
It would be helpful for folks to know that, you know, once we open up to our phases 3 and 4, where we have buses running, we do have limited hours. So school will run for just under 2 hours. I expect at the beginning, when kids are just coming back, a lot of the time that they are actually on campus is going to be spent getting oriented to the new things that are on campus, the new ways of showing up, and, you know, not having the congregation that, you know, school's a really social place and kids like to congregate, and we love for them to be able to have a social experience. But this whole requirement of this physical distancing is really important for us to be able to maintain as many hours as we would like to. So we hope that people will carry the habits that they've developed over the last year of wearing their masks, you know, regularly, and keeping distance from people that are, you know, not part of their household, and keep those practices at school so that we can keep school open. One of the things that we did get to do through the simulation was just see, you know, some normal behaviors for kids. So I pretended to be a first grader and I started to run up to my teacher and wanted to give her a hug and, you know, and for her to be able to practice, hey, we're going to keep our distance and wave, and we can still have a good social interactions from, you know, from a distance. So, again, school is going to look different than it has in the past, but it'll get us set up so that we're hoping that once we open, we can stay open continuously. The other thing is that we will be sending out some surveys to families and you know, asking if they are interested in some summer learning opportunities, because this has been, you know, quite a year. That will be another thing we'll be asking about. And we're really looking forward to, you know, just kind of moving forward again slowly. But what I think that will afford us is a safe reopening where we can, once we're, you know, we have kids back on campus, we'll be able to stay open.
Well, yes, this is very, very exciting. And I imagine several families are looking forward to this. And
teachers and all staff are looking forward to this too, because we miss our kids. So we know that not everyone will come back. And again, we're going to have distance learning will be a pretty major component of school for the, you know, immediate future. But keeping in mind that AB 86, it's not a requirement for opening. It's just a funding opportunity for opening. So it really, you know, they're trying to incentivize schools to open by providing the resources, the financial resources, if we, you know, if there are additional supplies or equipment that we need. So, you know, it's kind of the target that the state is, I wouldn't say pushing, but, you know, they're definitely saying this, it's time to open. And with Humboldt County now being in the red, you know, we're monitoring the county data and we're also monitoring the local data. So we kind of have this double requirement. So at some point, you know, the data was really good in the valley. There were zero cases, but we were in the purple in the county. We moved into the red for the county, and then the cases went up in Hoopa. So we've been really trying to be responsive and not move too fast if we know that there are a lot of cases locally. But we do have all of these safety measures in effect with all of the personal protective equipment and the safety protocols. So we're ready to take the next step.
Well, that's really great news. Education, the foundation of what we do and how we are.
Yes. And again, it's been quite a journey with trying to shift that educational delivery when we don't have actual contact with students. So I just wanted to also say, you know, so we're in phase two. That's what the board has approved. The Board of Trustees will authorize us to move into phase three, and that is when we do that cohort model up to 12 students in the classroom. It depends on, you know, the number of students will depend on how big the classroom is, whatever capacity there can be with maintaining 6 feet. I don't think we will have that many students in any of our cohorts. I think it'll be more like 8 kids that would come on Monday and Tuesday. And like I said, Wednesday's a distance learning day. And then the next group would come on Thursday and Friday. So once we do this kind of light opening, this soft opening with the groups of 4 or 5, as the health and safety data permit, then we'll go back to the board and ask them to authorize us to move into phase three so we can start opening with, you know, transportation.
Okay, that's a good, safe plan, I think.
Great staff.
Yeah.
Hardworking. No other kids. I mean, it's just, I think you're hard-pressed to find a school district where there is that interest and connection that our staff have with our students.
I would have sensed that, yes.
Yeah. So I think that's made it especially challenging for us because, you know, our staff are so invested in our students and their relationships, and then all of a sudden to have this huge chasm trying to cross over it with Google Meets and Zoom and packets, it's hard. I think there's been quite a bit of sadness with the, you know, inability to have that connection. So I think that was, again, that excitement when I was at the 3 school sites last week. You could really feel it was kind of this electric energy. It was really neat because people are excited to you know, get prepared to see their students.
Absolutely. Yeah, I sense that. Yeah, I was, I feel much the same about media, is that we do not have enough native people involved in media. in communications.
I think that that's another thing that our staff, you know, just with the connections in the community, there's a huge capacity to really get students involved with, I would say, you know, the trades and the arts in a outside of the school setting.
Yes, absolutely. That's the other angle.
Right. And I've talked about, slowly building a relationship with the radio station because it fits. It's a good fit with the school district.
Absolutely. We came out, it's a non-commercial educational FM.
I very much appreciated being able to be, on the COVID-19 report.
Absolutely.
We're looking forward to when it's just a general report and update about school and initiatives and, you know, progress. But it has really been helpful to be able to, I feel like the relationship is there between the radio station and the school district, and very supportive and, you know, helpful for getting information out.
Yes. At one time back in the 80s, we had a volunteer here, a community member who was involved in education. He started Your School on the Air. And it was a weekly program where he invited school board members, superintendents, teachers to talk about what's going on in the schools. And that's why I call it Your School on the Air. And it was a live call-in program, too. It lasted as long as he stayed in the community. Then he left and the program just collapsed. So I'm thinking that's why we need more people working at a radio station. And we need a bigger building, too, with this COVID, definitely. So we would have to do the same kind of rearranging of schedules and distancing and protocols too. But it's possible. We just need the more energy from the community to make it happen.
Right.
So I just like to broadcast seeds too.